powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Before we get started on Pete Carroll, I just want to send thoughts and prayers to everybody back east dealing with Hurricane. Pronounce that again for me, Curtis.
Isaias.
Hurricane Isaias. I'm watching some footage of what's going on in Hartford right now, where my parents live. It's amazing to just watch, like, an unbelievably huge tree just go over because of the wind. Several trees, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And people driving around in it. Very, very strange. You guys ever been in a hurricane?
No.
No, never been in a hurricane. We've had some pretty big windstorms here, but nothing close to a hurricane. When I was in Miami playing for Miami...
Hurricanes.
At one point, the Miami Hurricanes, yes, they were threatened like with a hurricane, and it was like, okay, they didn't know if it was going to hit or not, so we had to, you know, hunker down and do all that, and so Brooke and I are learning how to do that and what that was all about. That was kind of scary, but it didn't end up hitting as hard as obviously as it is in Hartford or anywhere across the East Coast.
Well, it's up the East Coast in New York. Yeah,
craziest thing I could think of from Washington State would be maybe the Nisqually earthquake. That's
probably
the closest to anything that would have. I mean, unless I'm
volcano,
missing something incredibly obvious. Well, yeah, but Mount St. Helens is like the 80s.
No. But Mount Rainier's that's going to blow any day.
What? Tom?
Tom, no.
Tom, no, it's not.
Sure it is.
Stop it. I don't like
Hopefully
this.
Not. I'll tell you, there's nothing scarier than a tornado, though. When I was living in Indiana, my friends who were from there, their protocol for dealing with that is weird. Their solution to an approaching tornado was... we need to leave the house right now and run out to the railroad tracks and lay in a ditch.
Stop.
I said I ain't doing that.
Where were you?
I went in the bathtub in Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, okay.
I went in the bathtub and just took my twin bed mattress and put it over me. I said, if this is the way I'm going to go, I'm okay with it. But I'm not dying in a ditch out there.
The worst part of this story is hearing that you had to sleep on a twin bed.
That I had to sleep what?
On a twin bed.
It was, you know, it's college. Doesn't matter.
Okay,
I'm lucky
okay.
I had a bed at all. I've slept on worse
that's
than
fair,
that.
That's fair.
All right. Pete Carroll from yesterday. Happy to be talking to everybody. Be talking football. Jamal Adams, obviously a big topic of conversation. Other guys, though. Let's go to cut four here. Josh Gordon.
This, again, is not in our hands. Josh did a really good job with us last year. He fit in really well. He was part of this team, and by the way we opened and embraced, you know, his coming to us, but also by the way he attacked it. So we are very open to that thought, and we'll see what happens. I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen on that.
Yeah, we're going to go through his thoughts on a couple of guys here. Quentin Dunbar, Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon. I expect that kind of vagary from Pete Carroll. Like, we talked about the two sides of Pete Carroll, the intense football-loving side, and then the kind of Russell Wilson-ish side, which is saying a lot without saying anything, Stacey, which is kind of what we got right there.
Yeah, well, Pete Carroll press conferences are notorious for, I personally don't mind them. As a reporter, I don't look forward to the day when we have a coach that's very ornery or doesn't like answering questions, but Pete Carroll, notorious for... speaking his own language in press conferences, so you kind of have to learn to parse through and look for answers. I think it's clear the team's still very interested in seeking more help and more additions to both sides of the ball, and I think that includes Josh Gordon.
He'd be over the moon to have Josh Gordon back as his third wide receiver. I think everybody up here would.
Yeah, I believe Josh Gordon has a great chance of making him self back a part of this roster. I think the Seahawks are very interested in Josh Gordon, and they're monitoring the situation in terms of when he is going to be able to be reinstated. It makes a lot of sense in a lot of different ways. One, Josh Gordon would be an inexpensive option, only being on the veteran minimum, and they have the familiarity on both sides with each other. So Josh Gordon, to me, is the number one candidate out of this group that can and will probably be a part of this roster.
All right, cut number five, Antonio Brown. Your thoughts, Pete?
What I'd say to you is just what we always say, because it's what we always do and who we are. John is competing at every turn, and there's never been a process, unless we just missed it, that we weren't involved with to understand what the chances were helping our club. And he's all over it. He knows what's going on right now, and as much as you can. And it remains a, you know, it's a very complex situation, and we just need to see where it fits somewhere down the road. Not, you know, and that's all I got for you.
You know, the fact that we know Pete Carroll and John Schneider are going to investigate every available option for every player out there, we know that definitively. It almost shocks me that other teams wouldn't do that. I mean, I know they're not the only team to do that, but it shocks me that there are teams that are out there that, you know, somebody might say, oh, X player's available. No, forget it. We're not going to look into it. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't every team always do their due diligence on a player like Antonio Brown, even with all the baggage?
Yeah, I think there's some that have, A, very clear policies, B, they don't feel like they have the structure or the setup to be able to handle it. And I think there's only a rare few places that feel like they could handle an Antonio Brown type of situation. Now, I think the very clear thing and the very clear phrasing of what Pete Carroll said in that situation was down the road. So, you know, Antonio Brown's suspension is for 8 games. You don't know where they're going to be at health-wise. You don't know where they're going to be at with COVID. There's a lot of different factors in that. And so I think that is why Pete Carroll is saying, look, John Schneider is going to monitor the situation all the way through, and we'll see where we're at when he's able to be reinstated, and we'll see where we're at from there. But I don't think that Antonio Brown is going to be imminent at this point in time. But I think that's the simple question to your answer there, Tom, is I think a lot of GMs are not as patient to work out some of these situations like Antonio Brown or the Jamal Adams trade. I think it takes a few special places that have the infrastructure from top to bottom and GMs that are willing to really go down that rabbit hole of really trying to investigate into every situation.
Have either one of you changed your mind on Antonio Brown at any point on whether or not you want him here? I'll say that there have been days where I've thought, maybe, but generally no.
I've gone back and forth. I think I used to be more open to it, and I would rather see Josh Gordon here. I think that he's someone who is clearly already liked by people in the locker room and has had some experience there. With Antonio Brown, the problem is that you look at him and you think, he's an amazing talent. Why wouldn't I want him here? And I believe in second and third chances for people and, you know, a chance to start over or redeem yourself or whatever. Like, I don't know that I'm writing him off just because of his past mistakes, but I also don't want to be the person that says, wow, look at what this guy can do on the field, and then just excuse it.
For me, it's definitely changed for me, because I think for me, my standpoint has always been, look, if you sign him in the offseason, you have him in the offseason to train for him to learn your system, for you to get a gauge of what the NFL is going to do suspension wise. You can have him in camp, and then he can serve that suspension, whatever it is. And if you don't feel comfortable at any point along the way, you can release him. Well, since they have not gone down that road at this point, I don't want to bring on Antonio Brown just because, you know, the team is injury ridden and you need him for a week or two, or you need him for the second half of the season. I would have rather have had him know the playbook, learn the playbook, and you know, be established in a part of the team, rather than him being kind of a outsider for hire, because I don't know if that's going to be a successful situation.
Okay, we've got Jamal Adams. We've got Quandre Diggs. We were supposed to have Quentin Dunbar. What's going on with him? Cut six.
Okay, well, I don't have any updates for you on Quentin's situation right now. It's really in the – it's out of our hands, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, pretty short and sweet there. I mean, what can they say? What can anybody say about Dunbar right now? I mean, the whole thing with his lawyer – I think I was off for a few days when that thing was going on, where it came out that he may have been the one who had paid off some of those witnesses to change their stories. So he had to recuse himself. Now he's got another lawyer. It's like there's so – and then there's DeAndre Baker. There's so many different – like it's like a three-way fork in the road where this case is gone. Quentin Dunbar, I mean, who knows where this thing is headed? I don't think any of us are counting on him being a member of this team this year, are we, Jake?
Well, the weird part is that they have not cut him. If the team really felt like they didn't, you know, feel comfortable about the situation, they knew where it was heading, I think that they would release the player. But because they have not, I still think that they are holding out hope that Quentin Dunbar can be a part of this roster. So I don't know how this is all going to unfold, but I do think that the Seahawks are hoping are holding on to a little bit of hope here that he can still possibly make it at some point in the season.
Well, and my understanding of the exempt list, and I need to double check this, but my understanding of it is that you can still interact with the team in some capacity. So it's not like you're out of the facility, you can't ever be here. You know, with Josh Gordon, it was completely taken out of Seattle's hands, and they really didn't have any communication with him. He was removed from the club, and that decision was entirely on Roger Goodell. The decision to reinstate Quentin Dunbar still lies with Goodell, but I think that he can still participate in like team meetings and work out. He just can't practice or play.
If they knew that he wasn't going to be able to play this year, but he might be able to play next year, would that be reason enough to keep him on the roster?
Potentially, yeah. I think that is one potential that you could have there in terms of saying, hey, we stuck with you through this whole process. You come back again with us. You've already learned the playbook. You've already learned the system. And if you're available for next year, we can sign you to a veteran minimum deal and with your opportunity to go out and try and earn big money after that next season. So, yeah, I think trying to just maintain that relationship there is one that I know the Seahawks, how they operate, how they go about things. They always want to make sure that these players feel that the Seahawks are still there. They're still holding out hope, that they're counting on them. And so I absolutely think that would be another reason as to why they didn't, Tom.
Where will Jordan Brooks play this year? Cut seven.
Well, I think the spot that makes sense to us at this point, he could play either outside. He could play all three spots at linebacker. He's physically capable, and I've seen enough film of him. I mean, there's a lot of film of him playing all different spots. So I know in his background, any college guy that came to us, you know, you would love to see what we've seen in him. He started for 4 years, and he's had thousands of snaps. So, the flexibility is there. I think his clearest path would be, and might the most obvious path would be at the Will Backer spot. We'll see how that goes. We'll start him there and then see how fast he can grasp it and how soon he can become comfortable, and we'll see.
Competing with KJ Wright at that spot, guys, how's that going to go, especially early on, Jake?
First-round pick, first-round selection. You made this selection for a reason. You felt like he physically could bring everything to the table that you're hoping for, the ability to run, to seek, to hit. That's what he does well, and running a 4.4 coming off of a hamstring injury at the combine, barely training for it. I mean, that's legit athleticism and ability. So I think that he's got a great chance. The biggest hurdle that he has to overcome, much like Marquise Blair last year, is show this group that he can pick up on the playbook really quickly, because I think his physical traits are outstanding and one that translates to the NFL very quickly. So it's really about how quickly he can pick up the playbook, in my mind. And, yeah, the competition is on, and K.J. Wright is going to be in for the toughest competition, I think, of his career up to this point, and it'll be interesting to see how it ends up shaking out.
Man, I like Jordan Brooks, and the competition is certainly on for K.J. Wright, but I think K.J. Wright is being written off a little too quickly by fans because he is an older player. He's now your team's most tenured player, but he had a good year for you last year. Like, he wasn't the necessarily like the younger player he used to be, but why not make sure that there's at least one part of your defense, the linebacker group, that is your most talented position group? I mean, it would be great to have a strength on your defense, a unit that ranks in the top five in the league. Pro Football Focus ranked the linebacker group number one in the league heading into the 2020 season, and that was in no small part because of Bobby and KJ Wright. So again, I know that he would save this team money against the cap. I get that. But I would just caution fans against writing him off too quickly.
I root for KJ Wright all the way in that competition. You show that rookie what's what. By the way, I saw KJ Wright on one of those, what show? It was like one of those shows.
Was it like a House Hunters kind of thing?
Yes. Yes, it's exactly what. He and his wife were looking for a house. And, you know, he was like describing the types of things he wanted in his house. He was talking about how he wanted a game room, like with, you know, pool tables so he could invite the homies over. That was really funny.
Now, with KJ, here's the thing, though. I want KJ to win this battle because KJ won the battle. Because physically, he was playing at a really high level. I don't want it to be a win by default, meaning that Jordan Brooks just simply couldn't keep up with the playbook, and that KJ is the one that they trust more. I want it to be because KJ's looking physically great, and he's running around great. So that, to me, is the big one in all of that.
I mean, it's an uphill battle. Financially, the team is kind of incentivized to have Jordan Brooks win it. You're under contract for a much longer period of time. Despite being a first-round pick, you're being paid less. KJ Wright is one of your highest salary cap hits. And Jordan Brooks, you used a first-round pick on this year. So there's an incentive there to have Brooks beat out Wright. So I would almost hope for the opposite. I hope that it's not just because they have so much draft capital in Jordan Brooks and because he's cheaper that they go with him. I hope they find a way, and this is blasphemous for people who want to see more of a nickel defense, but I hope they find a way to get all three guys out there.
Stacy, stop.
Jake,
stop.
I said what I said.
Stop it.
I said what I said. Put 11 linebackers out there.
Oh my gosh.
Do it.
I can't.
6-2 formation.
Mystery man, so Marquise Blair. Right, what are we going to do with Marquise Blair, guys? Cut 8.
For the most part, we have to figure out Marquise. He's the one that's going to get the opportunity to get in on the slot and do some stuff that puts him in a position to be really active and be part of the pressure packaging and some real aggressive part of the play.
What word does Pete like more, compete or stuff? He's going to do some stuff.
I would probably say stuff. He fits in stuff. Quite a bit, I would say, but compete is probably the most meaningful word that he says the most often. But with Marquise Blair, it is interesting because, you know, Stacy just said she wants linebackers. She wants the three. You know, she wants
11.
The base defense to live. She wants all 11 linebackers out there on the mm-hmm. field, which is it is blasphemous.
Do it.
But the best setup for this team, matchup wise, with all the teams that they are going to face this season, and particularly within their own division, is going to be nickel. They need to grow their nickel defense, and Marquise Blair needs to be a part of that so that they can continue to be more diversified, that they can match up better with the tight ends and the slot receivers that are part of it. And I love hearing Marquise Blair part of pressure packages and things of that nature, because we talk about Jamal Adams, his 6.5 sacks, his ability to get to the quarterback. Well, Marquise Blair has that same heat-seeking ability on the field to make big plays, and so I hope that they can find a legitimate role for this young man.
Jake, do you genuinely think that Marquise Blair has the upper hand for any kind of nickel role over Ugo Amadi? Because you were all in on Ugo Amadi last year, and I know that they were seen as kind of
yeah.
two different types of players, but I want a good year for Ugo Amadi, mostly because he was such a great interview with us. He seemed so eager to go out there, and he told us his goal was to be a special teams pro bowler. I mean, looking at very specific roles on the team where he can get better, and it's hard not to like a guy who says that, but I felt like after the press conference yesterday, I got the impression that Marquise Blair was the favorite in that role.
Well, it just depends on what style they want to play. I mean, that's the thing that I'm really interested to look at, because are they going to play more zone based off of having Marquise Blair on the field? Are they willing to play matchups in man-to-man? I personally think that this defense is flexible enough with his personnel that you can put Marquise Blair out there, that you can put Ugo Amadi out there, and that you shouldn't be limited or force people to just play one spot all the time. They need to be interchangeable. And yes, you can put base defense out there on the field to match certain personnel groupings or certain situations like short yardage and stuff like that. But it really comes down to how are they going to use their matchups against other teams. And that, to me, is the biggest key. I'm not down on Ugo Amadi. I think Ugo's great. I've been a big fan of his. But I do believe their best personnel grouping is to have Jamal Adams, Marquise Blair, and Quandre Diggs on the field at the same time.
Jake, hear me out on this one. There's the 6'2", six guys on the defensive line, your two linebackers. How do you feel about a 2-6? Two defensive linemen out there, six linebackers behind them. I think we could revolutionize the NFL. Let's bring it back. Think about it.
I don't know if I can get on board on that. But we could talk about it further.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure the strategy behind the 2-6, but we could maybe figure it out.
A 6-2 is a volleyball formation.
A 6-2 is also
old school.
Yeah. It's a goal line formation too.
Tom, I didn't make my volleyball team. Way to bring up old memories here. But I was asked to be team manager. That's an honor. So I was in middle school. I was not athletic. Yet.
You could have been the setter though. Like, you had the right size for the setter.
Yeah. Did I have the right skill though? I have yet to hit a volleyball over a net, but I'll do it one day.
Remember, you now have radios in your home, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. Curtis, what's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
Mariners taking on the Los Angeles Angels. Pre-game show gets started at 6. First pitch at 710 on 710. ESPN Seattle. Justin Dunn will be taking on Andrew Haney. Mariners taking on the Angels again. They had some success against those guys last week. By the way, I've been meaning to get to this for a while. I wish Bob and Graz were here to say that or to hear this. Shohei Ohtani. I feel bad for you. I really do. But Shohei Ohtani is a bust.
There you go.
Bust, bust, bust.
No, Tom.
He's never going to be a pitcher, and he's going to be. I bet you he's not. I bet you his hitting is no better than Kyle Seager over the course of his career, if that. All that hype over nothing as usual. Bust! NFL headlines are next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Let's run through some NFL headlines here, and I want to start with this one because this is inspiring. Ron Rivera says that Alex Smith, 36-year-old Alex Smith, who broke his leg in half a few years ago, is actually going to be in the quarterback competition against Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen.
I love it.
And Steven Montez. That is absolutely wonderful. By the way, I wish Dwayne Haskins luck. There's something about him I just like. I'm not sure what it is. So I wish him luck in the future. Allen's there because Rivera liked him in Carolina. But if they could squeeze like one more year out of Alex Smith, have him present in uniform, and he can actually go out there and play. Man, that would be one of the... He's already... You know, it's funny. He's already, in his career, one of the great comeback stories. not because of injury, but because early in his career, he had a different offensive coordinator every single year, and it completely screwed him up. And then Jim Harbaugh came in, solidified the thing, fixed it, and all of a sudden, Alex Smith turned into a very good quarterback. Very good quarterback. Had great success. Goes to Kansas City, same thing. If he didn't get hurt in Washington, they might have been a lot better. So I'm hoping for Alex Smith, for him to prevail here, guys. What do you think, Stace?
Yeah, I would have loved to see what that season looked like had he not had that awful injury. But I'm not sure if anyone else watched the Project 11 Alex Smith documentary on ESPN.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, like, trigger warning. It has very graphic images of his leg before and after surgery, including when he had an infection, a very scary infection. But he came so close to losing that leg, and seeing it without so much like muscle mass and tissue, it's unbelievable that he can even walk normally again, much less compete for a starting job. So I believe that Ron Rivera might really mean that. But even if it's just a show of good faith and a show of respect toward Alex Smith, the fact that he's even out there is, I think, testament to just kind of, I hate to overuse this word because it sounds like coach speak, but really to the grit that some people, especially football players, just have with these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd mentioned the revitalization of his career. Alex Smith has just always just kind of been a player who's just kind of gotten the raw end of a deal.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh turns his career around. He goes 6-2-1, and then gets a concussion, and Colin Kaepernick takes things over, and he never sees starting time in San Francisco again. Through Kansas City, very successful player. 2017 has his best year as a pro. Goes to Washington under a big contract, and just has that catastrophic injury. I mean, it is truly inspirational what he was able to do and overcome. Some very serious things, as Stacey, you just mentioned. But the true winner in all of this, in my mind, is actually Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins having Alex Smith involved around him every single day. This is the same guy that mentored Patrick Mahomes before Patrick Mahomes took off. Now, I'm not saying Dwayne Haskins is the next Patrick Mahomes, but Alex Smith is a tremendous quarterback mentor. He's a great guy, and he will do everything he can to help those two young quarterbacks with him. So if you're Ron Rivera, you couldn't have asked for a better positive thing to happen within your organization than to have Alex Smith actually competing to get back the starting job.
And it sounds like it's the ESPN article notes that there's kind of a caveat to it that I'm just going to read verbatim. There's still caution expressed internally about Smith and whether there's a difference between looking good and showing he can still be a quality starting quarterback, because we're obviously in a time, and we've had this conversation about primarily wide receivers, that when you're in training camp and when you're throwing and doing stuff in the offseason, it's easy to look really good. So it sounds like there's still real concern about, like, well, can we actually put him out there? You know, is he going to risk a serious injury by being out on the field and being sacked? Or, you know, can he still have the same power? So it sounds like there's still, I think he was a careful use of words to say he can envision him being part of that. But still, I think it's a good vote of confidence.
One more thing on Smith before we move on here. Just thinking about the chain of events in San Francisco. If he hadn't gotten hurt in San Francisco with that concussion, giving birth to the career of Colin Kaepernick, I wonder how much different history would have been.
Isn't it crazy?
Would there have been a quarterback battle between the two of them the next year?
I think eventually.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible that Kaepernick might have won that job anyway, and they might have ended up trading Smith. But if not, would they have traded Kaepernick somewhere? And how would his career have gone? Would he ever have got? I guess what I'm driving at is, would he have ever gotten to the point where he took the knee? Because when he took the knee, that changed everything, not just in the NFL, but in this country. I mean, that's national news way beyond sports.
Well, and he was a major player to do it too, right? Because at the time, he still was seen as a quarterback that could be a starting quarterback. And I think that it was important. This is blowing my mind, Tom. I think that it was important that he got the chance to start when he did, because that was also San Francisco at its best with its most talented weapons. I mean, I think Colin Kaepernick remained a competitive and a good player after that like now infamous NFC Championship game that Seattle won. Famous in Seattle, infamous in San Francisco. But they kind of dropped very quickly to the bottom of the NFC West after that because in part they lost some talent. So I think it like had to be that moment.
And when you're a coach, when you feel like you have a talented player like Colin Kaepernick and he not only plays well, but he continues to add another dynamic that Alex Smith couldn't during that run. Sometimes you do have to make the difficult decisions in those moments to therefore go with this player because you know the heights that can be reached. And so that was a very difficult moment. It was a controversial moment, but obviously it was the right one by Jim Harbaugh. And, you know, luckily for Alex Smith, he was able to, you know, go on and have a great career. And Colin Kaepernick was able to have a pretty nice run there with Jim Harbaugh for over the next couple years.
Okay, I'm going to ask you guys a question I asked you earlier. This is regarding Doug Peterson, the Eagles head coach, who has COVID, evidently asymptomatic, but he's coaching the team on remote. He's quarantined himself, doing the right thing, but he is involved in all team activities. He's not doing what you would be doing if you were symptomatic, which is probably just getting your rest and hanging out. Is he setting the right example for his team and anybody who might get COVID in the future? What do you think, Stacey?
I'm so sorry. I was communicating with Curtis, so it cut out my sound in the ears. There was a few Mariners roster moves I was just about to say. Can you repeat? Sorry.
Well, why don't Jake go first?
That was, yeah. Okay.
Well, when it comes to Doug Peterson, to me, I don't think that this is a situation that is irresponsible or sets a bad example. I mean, he's asymptomatic. He feels fine. He feels good and healthy. So he's doing as much as he can and contributing to his team and his club in the responsible way of keeping himself quarantined. And when he's able to, you know, have negative tests after being tested after a few more days, we'll see if he's able to return with the team. But he's doing meetings and conducting meetings virtually. But Deuce Daly is the assistant head coach who is running everything in person at the facility. So I actually think that they're handling this about as good as you can.
All right, Stacey, what are these roster moves that are so important?
The big one is that your part of your starting rotation, Kendall Graveman, placed on 10-day injured list with a neck spasm. Scott Servais, if you guys remember this, was mentioning it, I believe, during the pregame presser the other day that they were day-to-day with him. So I think that this was kind of expected, but not great news either way. That's retroactive to the third. Some other moves are Taylor Gilbo recalled, which we knew, and Zach Groats option to the alternative training site, also retroactive to August 3rd or post game August 3rd.
Man, that guy is a riot on the mound, isn't he? Like it's not pre-game, it's like his pre-inning ritual, walking around like hitting himself. It's amazing. Baseball players really are like they're the weirdest of all athletes, especially the relievers.
I forgot one. Joey Gerber, right-hander, will also. He was selected, and he's going to be available for tonight's game.
Curtis, you ever heard of Joey Gerber?
He's a prospect in the system. Tonight would be his major league debut if he comes in.
Mm-hmm. 23 years old.
Is he a big-time prospect?
He's number 19 in the Mariners system.
Brandon Gustafson of 710sports.com.
What is that, the internet?
It is.
Yeah,
the World Wide Web.
Yeah. You can find it at www.710sports.com.
From sea to shining sea, you can access it.
All right, we're back to sum it up in a minute. 710 ESPN Seattle. That's radio.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back! Ah!
Guys, we've talked a bunch today about players who are made in Pete Carroll's image. Highly competitive, love football, go out there, just let it all hang out, cut loose. In fact, let's go back to this one cut from Pete Carroll yesterday, talking about at Jamal Adams and those exact things. Cut one.
One of the things, you know, you could look at, you could see him be all fiery and interpret that like he's being selfish or like he's being, you know, overly outgoing or whatever. Come on. You know, this guy loves what he does, and he cares so much that the passion just explodes out of him at times, which is exactly what you've seen in players that we've had in our program for years. So to have a chance to add that to our team, forget all the playmaking stuff. It's that element of mentality that I'd love to add so that Bobby gets to play with a guy like that, and then Jay Reed gets to play with a guy like that, and Bruce, and they'll all feed off of each other because we all love to be that way. That's the way we love about this game, is cutting it loose and letting it go. And get into that primal mentality that this game allows.
Come on, that primal mentality. This guy is Pete Carroll. He's got Pete Carroll written all over him. You know what? In the back of my mind, something I keep coming back to. You guys remember a couple of years ago when ESPN's, was it Seth Wickersham, who wrote that really long, in-depth piece about the perceived... What would you call it?
Slights.
Like the way the dysfunction, I guess,
fracturing
amongst the Seahawks. The what?
A fracturing of the locker room.
Yeah, sure. Between like Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman and Baldwin and everybody. And there was that. Look, I've never been a Richard Sherman fan, but there's this one quote that I will stand behind him on. He responded. I think he talked in that article about how this is how we sharpen our iron. Right? Like when he took the ball and threw it at Russell Wilson and said, "You suck." Like, this is how we sharpen our iron. This is how our practices are run out here. We're hardcore and we go to it every single second. If it means sometimes we're going to fight with each other, that's just the way it is because we're competitive, fiery guys up here. And for some reason, that's hard for media and people outside of here to understand. I don't know that Jamal Adams is going to be throwing the ball at Russell Wilson, but to have a guy out there who, you know, is kind of cut from that cloth, it's a good thing. They don't have a ton of those guys like that, Stacey.
No, they don't at all. And I think that maybe it's easier for Jake to kind of talk about this too, because I think one thing that people who have been in that locker room realize that people outside of it don't, is that everyone's multifaceted, right? There are multiple sides to all people. And so what one person might see on the outside as a player being a cancer to a locker room, sometimes it's a guy that people don't get along with. Like, I don't think people were huge fans of Percy Harvin. But other times it's a guy that people have a lot of respect for that just happens to have an attitude that, you know, maybe your quarterback doesn't or another player doesn't.
Right. I don't think you're going to see Jamal Adams throwing the football at Russell Wilson whatsoever. I think there was a little something added extra than just, you know, hey, we're being fiery and we're being competitive and iron sharpens iron, as Richard described. I think there was a little extra something to that. But, you know, to me, Jamal is going to bring intensity. He is going to bring a purpose back to practice. I mean, Earl Thomas, there's famous stories of Earl in a walkthrough laying guys out and Earl being told to basically leave practice because it's like you're going to get people hurt. And it was so funny to me every time we went into a walkthrough in practice, you know, we're going through 2-minute drill and everything like that. And it's just supposed to be walkthrough tempo and guys are, you know, going to be allowed to catch the ball. They're not supposed to make, you know, plays on the ball. You know, Earl or Cam or Sherm or somebody like that would go out there and make a play on the ball. And you'd be like, well, if I knew you were going to do that, I wouldn't have thrown it that way, right? And so it just now everything just gets ratcheted up, and now before you know it, your walkthrough is actually turning into a mini practice, going like 75% instead of 100% when it was supposed to be like a 25% practice. It's that type of, you know, competitive energy that is just always there, and that's what Jamal is going to bring to the table. And we pinpointed this, you know, our show pinpointed this specifically throughout the season last year. Was, Tom, you put it in your words of viciousness. I put it in they lacked of edge and attitude. But that was very evident that there was not that viciousness. There was not that just run and hit mentality. There was not a fear factor that was out there when teams played the Seattle Seahawks in 2019. So with all the glaring holes of pass rush and secondary and coverage and base defense and all these other things, one of the biggest elements behind the scenes is they lacked that viciousness. And that, to me, is what Jamal Adams is going to bring back to this team, is a tone-setting attitude that I think not just it will be felt in the locker room and on the field in practice, but that other teams, especially in this division, are going to feel on Sundays.
Man, tone-setting attitude is a great way to say that. And at least right now, it doesn't seem like that's something that's going to conflict with the leaders that are already there. By that, I mean Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson. He, you know, deferred kind of to them during his own Jamal's press conference with reporters, mentioned them often. It seems clear that he is coming in kind of knowing that there's already a hierarchy of guys that have been the team captains and Wagner and Wilson for a while now. But yeah, tone setting attitude. It really is a perfect way to say it, because it feels like it's something that they used to have so much of, and you can always use more of, most especially in a team run by Pete Carroll. This doesn't make every team better, but it makes Pete Carroll's teams better. He has always really favored that, and you could sense it with his own excitement, even in this press conference where all the reporters are on Zoom calls. You could sense that he was excited to have that.
What did Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs have in common with Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas? Anything? Cut number three.
We had a very dynamic duo in years past, you know, when Cam and Earl were here. Those guys were entirely different players. I mean, they couldn't have been further. I mean, one guy was huge, the other guy's a smaller guy. Just a huge difference in the talent that they brought. But yet we incorporated their stuff to highlight the uniqueness of the players. And so that's what's going to happen here with Jamal and really Quandre Diggs is a really dynamic player too. He showed that last year with us. And as we already pointed out, Marquise has a whole structure to his game that we love to fit in.
You know, at some point, it's incumbent on this team to develop their own identity so that everybody, including the fans, can put the Legion of Boom behind us. I mean, they were great, but they're not here anymore. And comparing every guy who plays in the secondary to the Legion of Boom is probably not a fair thing to do. Like, they can only lose that battle. So they've got to go out there and earn it themselves and create their own sort of winning mentality, winning identity, so that they can move past that they're not living in that shadow anymore. That's my thought on that.
No, that's well said. And I think the shadow of a great player is always going to be cast when he leaves, but grows bigger and bigger the longer you go without finding someone that can replace him in... You're not going to replace an all-pro, but finding someone that can kind of replace that. They haven't been able to do it.
No, they have not, and I know that that's what they're looking for. But, you know, there was an interesting interview that Brock and Salk on their podcast last week that they did, a very quick interview with Ryan Clark, just trying to, former LSU DB and Pittsburgh Steelers safety, talking about how Jamal Adams loved being a part of tradition. And, you know, LSU is considered one of the best schools to go to for defensive backs, and Jamal Adams wanted to be a part of history, and that was one of the reasons why he wanted to be in Seattle to work under Pete Carroll, to also be a part of history, meaningful history of the Seahawks secondary being something powerful and meaningful in this league. So I think it's embracing both sides of that, moving on with the next faces and the next generation, but also embracing what that Seahawks secondary of the Legion of Boom era meant to this team and what it was about. Can they resurge that with new faces and in a different way? I think that's what they're excited about. I think that's why Pete Carroll was so pumped about Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs and Marquise Blair. And let's see how it all comes together here in 2020.
Justin Dunn, get through the fourth. Justin Dunn, get
through the fourth. Through the fourth. Through the fourth. Always.
Do it. We're back tomorrow.
Let's go, 7, baby.
10 ESPN Seattle.
Get past the fourth.
Get past the fourth.
Get past the fourth.